This is a podcast from the Wicked Solidarity Movement. You'll find our webpage at www.wsm.ie. This podcast was recorded at the second Dublin Anarchist Book Fair on Saturday the 3rd March. It's part of a debate with speakers from the Wicked Solidarity Movement, the Irish Socialist Network and IRIGI, who are discussing the question, what sort of Ireland do we want? This first talk is by Usheen of the Wicked Solidarity Movement.
Worker Solidarity Movement, anarchist organisation who are the people who organised today's book fair. Got a speaker from IRIGI, who are a socialist Republican campaigns group who has existed since April of last year, or thereabouts. And a speaker from the Irish Socialist Network, a radical democratic socialist organisation formed in 2001. What all three organisations have in common is a shared interest in campaigning and have worked together very closely over the last period in campaigns such as Shell to Sea, in anti-war stuff and stuff like that. So the purpose of this meeting is to tease out what we mean by revolution, what sort of revolutions we want, and what sort of society we envisage trying to create after revolution. So we're going to have each of the speakers for about roughly 10-15 minutes each, and then we'll show it open to the floor for questions, comments, etc. And hopefully we'll have a bit of a lively discussion out of it. So we're going to start with Usheen from Worker Solidarity Movement, followed by Dahi from IRIGI, and finally then Dan from ISN. So Usheen, over to you.
Okay. You told me there would be 15-20 minutes, so I'm going to perhaps a bit longer.
Yeah, that's okay.
I suppose I should just begin that I found this talk quite difficult to prepare, so it's probably not going to be very good. And but hopefully the other people will be better, and hopefully there'll be a bit of discussion afterwards, and hopefully that'll be better than what I'm about to say. But those of us in the revolutionary left are all kind of experienced this question of like what type of Ireland we want, and I suppose it's very pressing for us because we're all experienced of this accusation that we get very often of you lefties are, you know, you're anti this, you're anti that, you're anti everything, but what are you for? And personally, I've never found this a very difficult question to answer because I'm for a lot of things. I'm for production for need, I'm for sexual equality, I'm for people having to work less in order to be able to spend more time with their friends, with their family, I'm for friendship, I'm for family, I'm for community, solidarity, I'm for loving relationships, I'm for a million and one things. I could sit here for the next 20 minutes and just list all the things I'm for, but obviously that's not what I'm here to do. But I suppose one of the reasons why I found this talk difficult to prepare was because we are for so many things. And we've got so many hopes about what type of Ireland we could have, a new type of Ireland we could have, a better Ireland. And it's very difficult to describe them and describe our hopes without sounding like a hippie or without sounding like some idle dreamer or some raving ultra-left lunatic. And more importantly, it's difficult to describe them without diminishing them. I mean, it's the hopes for New Ireland, it's this belief that a better society is possible that has kept the revolutionary workers' movement alive for the last 150 plus years. And I don't mean to diminish those hopes. You know, people have struggled, fought and died for this belief that a new and better society is possible. And it's very important for me not to make these hopes, this belief that a new society is possible, seem meaningless or frivolous. When people ask me what am I for, what do I want? Very often people seem almost intimidated that I actually am for something, that I don't think it's meaningless, that I don't think a new type of Ireland and fighting for a new type of Ireland is a meaningless thing to do. I mean, nowadays we are faced with choice after choice after meaningless choice. Pepsi or Coke, Nike or Adidas, Deep Pan or Crispy Base Pizza, Mars or Snickers, The Independent or Times. And this extends to politics. We're given choices of Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, Labour or Sinn Féin, the PDs or the Greens. And they all offer us different things, they're for this, they're for that. And often when people say, what are you for? They expect me to compete with this. They expect me to offer them election promises. Well, I'm not going to offer you election promises. I can tell you straight off now that the WSM will not cut the lower rate of tax to 1%. Nor will we increase pensions to €300. Nor will we quench your thirst. Nor are we the right way to start the morning, and I can be perfectly honest with you and tell you that food will not taste better when you put it all together with the WSM. we're not particularly interested in people passively consuming our ideas. So if anybody here is expecting a series of election promises, I'm not going to give them. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't want to denigrate this question of being able to make consumption choices. Being able to decide what you consume is important. You know, the difference between, you know, a liberal democratic society and, you know, and a totalitarian society is to a large degree that we have the choice about what type of books we consume, what type of ideas we consume, that there's a certain question of what we consume that we have power over. And we also have power over more meaningful choices. Like, we have the power to decide who our friends are, who our partners are, and to some degree we have a power over being able to make decisions that are even more meaningful, like whether to have kids, where to live, what career to pursue. But all of these choices that we do have the power to make, they're all personal. They're all purely personal and completely individual. We don't get to make collective decisions, or we don't get to make social decisions. We get to make decisions about what we consume within society, but we don't get to make the decision about what type of society we want to live in. We don't get to make decisions about what we produce, when we produce it, or how we produce it, when, where, or how we distribute it. We don't get to make decisions about how our natural resources are used, nor do we get to make decisions about how our labour is used. We do not get to make the decisions about how our neighbourhoods are developed, about whether or not the local children's hospital gets shut down, as is likely to happen in Crumlin, or about whether an incinerator is built in our neighbourhood, as is about to happen, as is happening in Ringsend, or about whether a dangerous pipeline is built next to our houses, as is happening in Rossport. We don't get to make decisions about how we deal with antisocial behaviour because we're not in control over the police, as has been made evident again and again and again over the last number of years, most recently with the death of Terence Wheelock. I could list all day the things, the aspects of our lives that we don't have control over, but I'm not going to, because for one, it would be extremely depressing, and secondly, because that's not what I'm here to do. But it's clear that something has to change and that we need to change something. And we hear this all the time. People say, oh, we need to change society, we need to change this, we need to change that. When people say we need to change something, they almost never mean we need to change something. They mean the government needs to change something, that the bosses need to change something, that somebody else needs to change something, and that all that we can do is to lobby them or support them in making their decisions. When anarchists, when we say we need to do something, we actually mean what we need to do. What all of us, when we get together collectively, taking collective action, what we should do. We don't want to do anything for anybody, and we don't want anybody to do anything for us. We don't want to elect anyone or be elected by anyone. And we don't want to fight on behalf of some great principle or on behalf of some religion or nation or for any ephemeral idea. We want to fight in our own interests, for ourselves. We want to fight to get control over our lives and over our society. Because that's what anarchism is about. It's about taking control over our lives. It's about being able to make the decisions that affect us. It's about having participatory direct democracy in our workplaces and in the places that we live. It's about being able to make collective decisions about our lives. And it's as we struggle collectively today that we gain the ability to make collective decisions as our lives, that we build a movement to be able to do this. And as anarchists, we want to keep on struggling and gaining the ability to make collective decisions until we live in an Ireland where we can make collective decisions about how we live our lives. Until we can make a decision about what we produce, when we produce it, how we produce it, about when, where and how we distribute it, about how our natural resources and our labour is used, about how our neighbourhoods are developed, about how we deal with antisocial behaviour. We want an Ireland where each and every one of us gets to make the decisions about how we live and structure our lives individually and collectively. And this is the type of Ireland we want. As I said, anarchists have always seen the possibility of the society developing in the struggles today that arise from people working against statism and capital. As Emma Goldman said, anarchism is not a theory of the future to be realised by divine inspiration. It is a living force in the affairs of our lives, constantly creating new conditions. We as anarchists have always seen the possibility of a new society as arising from working class people resisting the evils of capitalism and statism today. The struggle of working class people to protect our liberty and under a hierarchical society and to enhance our liberty is going to be the basis of a society without any hierarchy. Anarchists draw upon the autonomous self-activity and spontaneity of working class people in struggle to inform our political theory and our vision of a free society. The struggle against hierarchy, in other words, gives us a glimpse of what an anarchist society would be like, what its initial framework would be, and it gives us the experience to manage our own activities, which is what would be required for such a society to function successfully. In struggle, we create the means by which we can manage society. By having to organise our own and manage our own struggles, we become accustomed to self-management and self-activity, and we create the possibility of a free society. Thus, the framework of an anarchist society comes from class struggle and from the process of the revolutionary movement itself. Anarchy is not a jump into the dark, but rather it is a natural progression of the struggle for freedom in an unfree society. The contours of a free society will be shaped by the process of creating it, and therefore will not be an artificial construction imposed on society. Rather, it will be created from below up by society itself, as working class people start to break free of hierarchy. The class struggle thus transforms those involved as well as society and creates the organisational structure required for a libertarian society. Now, some of you might be saying, well, that's all well and good in theory, but is this practical? Does this happen? Can this happen? And the answer is yes, simply. It does happen and it has happened and it can happen. And this is how society develops and this is how an anarchist society will develop. I mean, if you look at history, take for example the network of workers' councils that emerged in the 1953 East German uprising. The spark for this uprising was when the Bolshevik government tried to intensify production and lower wages. So East Berlin workers downed tools, and there was a citywide strike. This quickly spread out over all of East Germany, and workers formed factory and strike committees, which quickly developed into workers' councils. I take the Limerick Soviet in 1919. This occurred after the British Army occupied Limerick City and declared martial law in retaliation for a policeman's death during a failed IRA rescue attempt. The Trades Council called a general strike in protest of the army occupation, and for the next 2 weeks the council ran the city. No shop opened without their permission, food prices were regulated to stop profiteering, only transport authorised by the council was able to move through the city. The Limerick Soviet even issued its own money. Or if we go further back to the first Petrograd Soviet in 1905, we can see how it emerged out of class struggle. It emerged when a rich man named Georgi Nassar approached the anarchist Bolin saying that he would be able to provide strike relief funds for the striking workers, but he didn't know how to distribute them. So Bolin and Nassar organised it so as that the workers from the various places that were out on strike would send a delegate to a meeting in order to organise the distribution of strike relief funds. And it was this meeting, this system of delegation, that turned into the first Soviet. Or if we take a more recent example, with the movement for workers' self-management in Latin America, we take the example of what's probably the most famous self-managed factory in Latin America at the moment, the Zenon factory, which was taken over in 2001. This factory takeover, this development of self-management, started when two or three people in the Zenon factory started going on demonstrations for workers who were laid off in a local factory just 5 kilometres down the road, and they started to organise with their fellow workers in assemblies. As these assemblies became more established, they started making demands. First thing they won was a common lunch break, and as things progressed, the assemblies became more established. By 2001, when when the company tried to lay off all the workers, the assemblies were sufficiently established to take over the factory and run democratically by the workers themselves. When they did so, they renamed the factory Fa Sin Papa, Fabrica Sin Patron, which stands which means factory without bosses. Since the factory was taken over, they've contributed greatly to the local community. They built a hospital, and they've also been extremely involved and coordinated with almost 300 other self-managed factories all over Latin America in order to advance the movement for worker self-management. Obviously, there's problems with all of these forms of organisation that developed out of the struggle that I mentioned. But they do show one thing. They show that this new type of social organisation does develop through struggle, and that the possibility of a new society does arise through struggle. I mean, to remind you again that the struggle in the Fast and Pat factory began with two guys carrying a banner on a demonstration, and it's now like a world-renowned factory occupation and part of a continent-wide movement for worker self-management. because anarchists have always seen the possibility of a new society emerging from struggle, we've always emphasised the need for the importance of means and how means determine where we get to, how our struggles determine where we get to. And it's for this reason that anarchists have always stressed tactics and organisation which increase the power, confidence, autonomy, initiative, participation and self-activity of oppressed and exploited people. This for us means supporting direct action, solidarity and self-managed organisations run from the bottom up. And that's why we in the WSM are involved in workplace struggle in Shelter Sea, in the Terence Wheeler campaign, in the anti-war movement, in the pro-choice movement. And it's why in the struggles against the service charges, we argued against electoralism and for collective direct action. When we struggle together, we gain the power to make decisions that affect us, and it's only by fighting our own battles, relying on ourselves and on our own ability and power, and organisations created and run by ourselves, that we gain the power, confidence and experience needed to change Ireland for the better and hopefully create a new and better Ireland in the place of the current one.
You've been listening to a Workers' Solidarity Movement podcast. The podcast was recorded at the Second Anarchist Book Fair, Saturday 3rd of March 2007 in Dublin. This speaker was from the Workers' Solidarity Movement talking on what sort of Ireland do we want. There were two further talks as part of this debate, one from the Irish Socialist Network and one from IRIGI. You can listen to these podcasts at www.wsm.ie. This is a podcast from the Workers' Solidarity Movement. You'll find our webpage at www.wsm.ie.